welcome to the big show. Yes, we're here to discuss all the big stories in tech. And of course, the investigatory powers bill has hit in the UK. And if someone doesn't mention that, then I'm going to mention it because it's well worth a long discussion. And we've asked Adam to stay behind as well after the Mac show to talk about it, because I know he's dead interested to find what liberties we are losing in the UK compared to how many they've still got in the US with the Apple iPhone thing. Joining me to discuss the week in tech, fantastic bunch, starting us off with a new haircut by the looks, mate. You look like you should have been in the Jackson 5 with that, boy.
I'm here.
You're in. Chris Ashley, how you doing, man?
Chris Jackson this week.
Chris Jackson.
It's only a couple more weeks. Probably one more week or two before I cut all this off. But this tends to be my winter look.
I was going to say, have you grown that? Are you like a bear? Washington bear?
Yeah, well, I guess at this point, yeah. I mean, I got a crazy beard going on. I got the full bush. See, I grow my bush out so people know. I cut my hair off. I grow my bush. You have
mate, just stick to the stuff on your head. Don't start growing anything else out. But.
I cut my hair bald because I choose to.
We've already got a show title, Chris Ashley's Bush.
Yeah, that's right. There you go.
Oh, man. We're not going to get
props. Everyone. Thank you for having me back.
We're going to get no listeners now. Next to him, it's Jeffrey. On time.
Not only on time, but an hour early, apparently, as well.
No, daylight savings happen for you guys, but not for us. We don't get it until the end of the month, so.
Yeah, I have about a three-week window when daylight saving happens in the United States before my brain, my calendar, and everyone else's calendar matches up. So for, like, the next couple weeks, it's a crapshoot where I will be and at what time.
I was going to say that's clearly true because it's actually a two-week window, but never mind. And next to him, it's Adam. Thanks for sticking around, mate. Looking forward to this. This should be quite good.
Thanks for letting me hang out a little bit longer.
Yeah, just on the Mac show. Did touched a little bit on the old securities thing, but not very much. So we're saving it for this show. Okay. And last but by no means least, Camps. How you doing, buddy?
Pretty good. Long time no see.
Yeah, right. Not long at all. Kids speed up since?
Yeah, fast asleep. Upstairs that way.
Excellent, excellent. Right. The week in tech, the big stories that have gone. Muller's down here as well, and he's going to join in because we're going to talk about the investigatory powers bill to start off with. And, of course, Muller has extensive experience of being arrested. Of arresting people. So, in the UK, there was a reading. It wasn't a reading. It was an open questions to Theresa May about the investigatory powers stuff that's allegedly come in Snooper's Charter, if you like, in the UK. And it was all outlined about the justice intervention, the judicial intervention, the commissioner, and then all of the other stuff that goes on around that. And I've written a couple of blog posts on this. And essentially, one of the things that, you know, everyone's been consumed with the column inches of the iPhone for San Bernardino and the New York iPhones. But actually what I think you guys in America don't realise is the fact that the judicial oversight that you're expecting on this phone, to a certain extent, has already disappeared here in the UK. We are down to enforcing authorities, so the police, the Revenue and Customs, and Inland Revenue Service, and local authorities have the ability already under RIPA to request information for surveillance, and they don't have to go to a judge for that. They can just go to a senior officer within the enforcing authority to gain that, and that's going to increase the amount that's there that they can request for is going to increase under Investigatory Powers Act. And also the other thing that you're going to get with that is the fact that previously you had to ask for one thing and you got an authorization for that one thing. Now you're going to be able to ask for blanket access for a month-by-month basis from a senior officer, and you can get it. So
that is all so proposals. Messed up.
This is all proposals in an amendment, right? This is what I'm trying to understand.
Well, so at the moment we've got RIPA, which is Regulatory Investigation Powers, and that allows for lower level potential offences to be investigated using surveillance with an authority from a senior officer, it says in the legislation, from the enforcing authority. So that could be a police senior officer, it could be an HMRC senior officer, in inverted commas, senior personnel, and it could be anyone in MOD or the Secret Services over here, MI5, MI6, that can authorise that.
And these are requests typically going to ISPs and phone companies, and that this is kind of like some of our wiretapping stuff.
Yes.
Right? Am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah, it could be a no, more often than not, it's not going to be a wiretap. It would be a request for information from a held data source, and it could be access to a CCTV camera footage. A single one specifically outside a particular place where you think you might be able to record a criminal activity taking place.
This is the part I'm trying to understand that I really have the question on, is the existing law that's in place, what are they required to gather? And because there's requirements that they gather certain data and hold certain data, right? For certain periods of time so that it can be requested at some future point?
If you're talking about the new legislation, that's going to require ISPs to hold all data relating to transactions and information exchange for 12 months.
And what about phone and cell phone companies?
Yes.
At the moment, the legislation requires that cell phone providers hold call records, and you're only going to receive the headers of emails, the communications elements of emails. You're not going to get the content of emails in the current standard. But that'll change.
Yeah. Ripper doesn't cover...
Use the microphone, dude. That's why I gave it you.
Sorry, Ripper doesn't cover accessing CCTV evidence following. What you need to do is...
No, it's about...
Applying to... If you want to watch someone commit a crime or want to watch an area where you think a crime's going to be committed, that's when you need a Ripper. If a crime has already happened and you want to go to a shop or a police or the council and access the video, you don't need Ripper for that. You just need to go and get the footage. You need Ripper. It's basically Ripper covers when you want to do a surveillance. So if I want to watch outside a bookies because I know there's a gang that wants to rob that bookies, I want to put the camera on the front of the bookies. I need to get a Ripper for that because
it's preemptive.
I'm using directive surveillance towards that bookies to catch that gang.
Yeah, so it's preemptive rather than looking for existing evidence which is there, which you would have a right to access to under suspicion.
Ripper means you can't directly access, you can't watch someone without permission. But you can accidentally watch someone.
So just to clarify, Muller, if you said there was CCTV footage on a camera in a shop and you believe that may have captured a criminal act, you would first of all go in and request that, and they'd probably give it you without a fight. But if they put up a fight, would you need a warrant to access that, or would you just seize it?
You'd seize it.
Because you knew that you had reasonable suspicion that criminal evidence
was there. No, you got a power to seize
there.
It.
Yeah, yeah.
End of.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. See, that can't happen here.
You can't seize the CCTV footage.
Yeah.
Without a warrant.
No, you have to get a warrant first.
Right. So Jeff is our cop on the other shore. You wouldn't be able to walk in and seize that under reasonable suspicion.
No, you would not. You could go in and ask the shop owner, hey, can I have that footage?
And 90% of the time you'd probably get a yes.
Right. But if the shop owner says, I'm not comfortable just handing that over, then you just go get your warrant. You come back and seize the footage with your warrant. And away you go.
But at the point that you identify that there's potential evidence on that CCTV system, if they were then to delete that, that would be an obstruction of justice, surely, because you'd identified that you needed it.
Yes, I think that would probably fall under there for sure. But also in extreme cases, they wouldn't just leave and say, okay, you know, it's there. They're going to leave some money there.
Right. Yeah, you have a qualification right called exigent circumstances, and that means that basically the shit's going down right now, and you need to have access to something so that you can stop, a kidnapping, or go catch the person that just shot someone else, or you have someone that's like bleeding to death and you have to get at something to be able to identify them, to save their lives, you know, things like that.
Well,
and so in those cases, you can then take what you need and then get your warrant after the fact.
Yeah, you can hear as well. You can get retrospective agreement afterwards, but you better be right.
Yeah, you better be right, because if you're not, your case is just over, because at that point, everything... following is considered fruit of the poisonous tree, and you have no evidence that you can enter into court.
Exactly.
Yeah, they'll take it all.
So, I mean, Miller's put in the chat room here that Ripper and Snooper's charter is different, and I don't think it is entirely, because Ripper is being, I'm right in saying that Ripper is being repealed by investigatory powers.
Yeah, it will be, yeah.
Yeah, so it's in inverted commas, it's heavily amended to the point that effectively Ripper is going to be absorbed by the elements of Snooper's charter, and Snooper's charter is going to be beyond that. So what you're going to see is the investigatory power stuff that was debated on Tuesday is going to be Ripper plus.
I think Ripper was abused. Yeah, to be honest with you. It was definitely abused.
Well, steady on what you say. I can say it if you want. I know what you want to say. So.
No, it was definitely abused by certain, shall we say, councils.
Don't say who. No, moving on.
What I'll say is that certain governmental bodies overused it.
They looked at it for fly tipping and stuff like that.
Oh, God, yeah. Even that for parking surprise. And all sorts. Where police and security services aren't going to... don't do that because it's not in our interest.
Well, the one of the problems that you had with Ripper was that you had to ask for one piece of information. You had to ask for one piece of surveillance. And then you got an authorization for that. And if that then discovered that, oh, hang on a second, actually what we need is this... then you had to ask for another. And what that ended up with was last year alone, there was 30,000 requests for information across, I don't know, there's 15 forces, is there something like that?
It's more than that, it's 50-odd.
50 forces. The onus on the authorisation of that became ridiculous. And actually, by the time they got the authorisation through from senior officers, something like 45 to 60% of the requests ended up getting no response because the evidence was gone.
Actually, if I went to my superintendent or wherever and asked for a Ripper authorization, that would cover me for the whole of the country if I wanted it. If I knew what I wanted, I could actually get the authorization from one particular person and go up to Yorkshire, to Campion Land, and get it from there. I don't need to go to up to Yorkshire and go to a superintendent up there. I just need to go to my own and say, I need to go to Yorkshire
and look at this
place.
So Horses saying in the chat room, it reads different. Ripper appears to talk about preventing based on suspicion, whereas Snoopers appears to be blanket monitoring in a case that you may need it. It's not blanket monitoring. It is storage of information pursuant to the fact that a request for that information can be made. It's not, no one's watching everything that you do. That's just not... No more than your ISP already knows what you do. They already know which porn sites you go to, of course.
Right.
So they're not, and based on the fact
you think they'd speed up those sites for me.
Well, based on the fact that you know his name's Horse, holy crap, what kind of porn does he go and look at? But that's already taking place. The ISP already knows who you are, what you are. They're already inspecting your packets, and they're already slowing down your packets if they want to try and to look into them. So there is no greater surveillance or monitoring taking place by the state over what you currently do. All they're asking is that the ISPs hold on to that data so that within a year there can be an inspection of that data to find out what went on. And none of it is going to be about the porn you're watching, mate.
There's
a couple of good points, and I'm just looking at the article in The Guardian at the moment, and there's two things here that caught my eye. And one is it makes explicit in law for the first time security services powers for the bulk collection of large volumes of personal communications data.
Because the security services are not the ones collecting. That's the point. It's the ISPs that are doing the collecting, and they're already collecting.
It is the point there that it's the collection of the security services collecting it from the ISPs. I have no idea what's gone wrong with my camera there.
Stop your porn download, mate. Now you've got the idea that Horse has got some decent porn. You want some and that's it. It's gone. No, the my understanding is, and I'll stand corrected by anybody on this quite happily because I'm reaching to a certain degree, but my understanding on this is about the fact that there are still requirements for records to be held at the moment by phone providers, and it's only called data, it's not called content. That is going to expand to call content. So there will be a requirement for them to hold all the information that you've got about the call that you made, who you made it to, and to a certain degree what was exchanged within that phone call, certainly within text most definitely. Whereas at the moment all they have to do is keep the call header, nothing else.
I have a question about that. So data at an ISP, those requirements, if a shop owner or somebody who has a surveillance cam system is using, because most of those are going cloud-based now for their data storage. So does this have an impact on that? So if I'm in a service, I'm using Dropcam or something like that, and that data is being stored at, you know, Nest or whatever at Google, do they, under this, would they have a requirement to hold that video data? Because generally, and this is a big problem for law enforcement now, as this stuff moves to the cloud, a lot of these owners don't get the big, you know, data package. So they'll have a camera that only stores, you know, 24 hours of footage and then dumps the rest.
But would a private company be affected by this and be forced to store
it? Well, it wouldn't be the private company. It would be the ISP. So the ISP, meaning Google or whoever's storing the data, would they have a requirement to keep it? I'm just curious. I don't know. Would they have a requirement, even if they don't make it available to the customer anymore? So I pay for 24 hours, but if the laws and the regulations say, oh, you have to keep that for 30 days because it's data and it's stored on your server and you're the service provider for the video, you know, for the video stream. I'm just curious.
In the UK, I think you've got to keep it for at least a month.
But I mean, does that kind of data count? Because I mean, that becomes very valuable data.
We're talking about CCTV. If you keep CCTV or have a CCTV camera, you have to be licensed, and there's certain laws and regulations you have to keep, and you also have to keep footage for at least a month. I think it's a month anyway, or 6 weeks, so it can be reviewed and checked.
So does that apply to webcams as well that stored their data in the cloud?
Is that if you
not private webcams, but certainly company webcams and shops.
Yeah, that's not a domestic.
So if I have a little jewelry store, you know, down in the village,
yeah,
I have a drop cam in there.
In the UK, you would. You're US, so it's different.
No, yeah, I'm just asking about the UK. I'm trying to understand.
If you owned a shop here and you had a cam, you would have to keep the footage for at least a month. Which is in your own interest, really, because if there's an offence, that's why you want it.
There's a point here from Horse in the chat room. So, Ewan, may I please collect, open, and copy all your email in case I want it later? Signed, HMRC. No, you can't. The ISP will already have all of that information, and they will have kept it. And if HMRC senior officers make a responsible request to the ISP, without warrant from a judicial oversight, they will be required to give that information to HMRC, and they can open and copy. Well, they don't need to copy because they'll have it. They can open and look at all the referencing on the emails that I've sent from my ISP here, if they want to. But you've got to bear in mind, and Muller's the one that's made this point actually in a conversation we had earlier on, and he, you know, so I'll give him the credit for it. If this gets to a court, someone's going to say, right, so they have all this data. It's been given by the prosecution as admissible evidence. So the judge is going to say, right, hang on, how did you come to acquire this? What justification did you have to go and look for this? And they're going to call for the person who asked for that information to be collected. And they're going to say, right, okay, what was your justification for collection of this information? And if there isn't a good enough response, that information will be thrown out by the court during the trial against you. So it's not just to say there's no judicial oversight is maybe a bit crass on my part, but there isn't in terms of gathering the information. I'm correct there in a lot of cases. But when they actually come to use the information in court to prosecute you, they may still have hurdles to get over that the judiciary will put in front of them.
Well, we've already seen that because some of the judges have already said, oh, I don't think this is right. So I think you can
use
see
the mic, dude.
Sorry, you can see judges already going, we're going to put a few hurdles in front of this. And they are going to basically make it a hard time. And I reckon already there's been some BBC things I've been reading where the judges are already going like, this isn't right. It's contrary to the Human Rights Act, for instance, one or two of them said. So I can see, actually, if they don't word this right and don't put it in the right context, I think they're going to have a hard time in court.
There's a comment here from in Batwing which says, I thought GCHQ was keeping an eye on all our emails anyway. And the answer to that is no, because they ran a program called Echelon, which was before Prism, because Prism was a copy of Echelon that the NSA ran. They don't have access to every single email that goes around the internet, mate. Most of it was cell phone communications, nothing more.
Here's the thing that people need to understand about email, though, too. is every server that your email bounces through has a copy of those emails.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it's all over the place. So, I mean, this is how people like Hillary get in trouble with their emails. It's like, you think you delete it, and even if you delete it on your local ISP server, every hop that it made on its way to wherever it went has a copy.
Yeah. This is a good argument for using things like PGP to encrypt your email, right, so that you don't have to worry about who's going to see it later.
Because everything's going to be all right.
Every little thing's going to be all right, I think, Bob.
I didn't think anybody caught that.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. Horse has come back and he said, is that not the issue? I do not do anything that would make MI5 worried, but guarantee me that HMRC councils or who knows what will never be given access to third-party information in the future, and I've got no issue. I'm not paranoid. I'm just typing what I believe the average muggle thinks. Does the average muggle trust the government? My experience is no. Well, I'm sorry, mate, but actually your government does offer you an awful lot of protection, and there is a judiciary which protects you from your government, and there is also a legislature that protects you from your government and your judiciary. That's the way that checks and balances work, pal. And it always has worked, and it actually works reasonably well. There's a few hiccups. There's a few tinfoil hat people like Doc that say, you know, there is a string of instances where the FBI or whether the government has overreached, and they have. But there's other things that have pulled them back and gone, yo, hang on a second, you can't be doing that. But there are MPs who regularly sue other MPs for going ultra vires in the state that they're offered. Claire Short sued, do you remember the On Your Bike thing with Norman Tebbit? If you want a job, get on your bike. And he actually said that you had to claim your allowances from the place where you were registered, the Dole office you were registered. And they passed that through in legislation. And Claire Short sued Norman Tebbit and said, you can't do that. That's ultra vires. You're asking beyond the capability that you've got to specify the Dole office. Anyone can pick any Dole office up to collect any revenue that they want from the Dole. So you cannot do that. And she won. And that's there is checks and balances throughout every single process that you do. But I think one of the conversations that would be good to have, and we've kind of touched on this a little bit in the Slack room, I'm a fundamental believer that you have an absolute right to, no, you have a right to privacy, but that right to privacy is not absolute if your enforcing authority and government has a reasonable suspicion that you are conducting a criminal activity or doing something that is wrong against legislation, then you do not have a right to absolute privacy in that circumstance. With a judicial oversight, there is an ability for that party to then come and check what you have to prove that you aren't doing wrong. And I don't think that's a problem. You cannot have an unopenable box, because that's not right. That is
unsafe. But we do have unopenable boxes.
Where are they?
Yeah, that's a valid point. You're talking the difference between do you have the right, and do you have the ability? And that's the other thing about this argument that's so frustrating, is most people don't understand. Criminals know that they have the ability, and if I want to, I can go totally dark in this day and age and have all the keys and have all the information and protect all of my information if I'm smart about it. And if I really want to hide everything that I'm doing from authorities and from my ISPs and from everybody else, we have the technology, we have the capabilities. So, you know, there is that.
The problem, right, with that.
Plus, we also have a thing called a diplomatic pouch. And a diplomatic pouch is
that's
a warrant-proof zone.
That's different, because that's nothing to do with members of the public. That's not general, no, that's not general rights
is,
privacy.
It's an unopenable box.
Well, okay, so you've got a diplomatic pouch which allows a diplomat to have absolute secrecy from another country. And that's different entirely from what we're talking about, though, Jeff.
Yeah, but just to speak to what you said, Ewan, and what the point that you were making, there's one aspect of that always seems to come up, which is when they make these rules and say, you know, you don't have privacy unless you do have privacy unless there's a suspicion. But what happens is the ability to create a suspicion becomes very broad. And so, like, if you like just hear what, you know, if they tell police officers, if somebody's driving the speed limit, they're probably hiding something. If they're driving too slow, they're probably hiding something. And if they're driving too fast, they're probably doing something. So you're like, well, then I guess every single driver is suspicious, and that's what happens. So I get what you're saying. It makes a lot of sense. But the problem is that's not a real protection anymore, because all they're going to do is change the narrative to get what they want.
I would grant, I bow to your greater knowledge here, Chris, that as a black man in America, there is possibly a complete difference to driving a car down a highway at any speed compared to a white guy doing it. But in the UK, I have to trust to my government and my police force that you know, if I'm behaving responsibly and not in a suspicious manner, and genuinely not in a suspicious manner, not any speed that matters, that there are checks and balances that will stop that from taking place. And there are plenty of instances. We were talking on the Mac show, you know, I got stopped about a year ago, and the guy said, "So can I ask where you're going?" "You can ask, but it doesn't mean I have to tell you." Because I don't. I'm going where I want to go. You guess. Can I ask where you come from? Still your guess.
You know, you went along those lines. We have a thing that people have been very confused about for quite a while in the United States, where a cop stops you for a traffic stop, and then they say, "Can I look at what's on your smartphone?" And people think they have to unlock their smartphone and hand it to the police, but they don't.
Well, but that's just, I mean, that's smart policing and stupid people.
Sure, but still, it's kind of creepy just to think that someone can walk up to your car, a police officer could walk up to your car and say, "So I want to see what's on your smartphone."
That's
right. And they have no reasonable suspicion to expect that they're going to find criminal activity. They have no probable cause to search your phone. They're just asking for permission. It's an extension of what police have been doing for a long time in the United States, where they stop you for something minor and then say, "Mind if I search your car?"
Yep.
And then find something else related to another crime, and then you get arrested, and people are like, "Holy crap,
what just happened?" There was a cop that got in trouble for doing that very thing.
Hang on, that's canny cop work, mate. I'm sorry.
No, it's not. It's unlawful here as well.
Well, no. Stop.
Doing it.
No, it's definitely unlawful.
Yeah, and I would agree with you, Ewan. It's not the norm.
So let me just give you an example. So I've had a lot to do with in the past with what is OSHA in the States. So it's in the UK, it's the HSE. And one of the things the HSE regularly do, if someone's been injured in a corporation and they're getting stonewalled a little bit by the front office, they go around the back and they wait till workers are leaving and they say, "Oh, you know, we're from the HSE." They don't enter the premises. They stand there and they go, we're talking to the front office about the incident, but, you know, is the guy okay? Is everything fine? And then everyone goes, "Yeah, they're fine. They're okay. You know, they've got a broken leg." "Right, broken leg." "So, we're just confused about all this stuff. You know, we're talking to the front office about this, but we haven't really clarified, you know, what actually happened." And all these people just have a conversation with this guy outside who says he's an HSE inspector. And all of what they give is perfectly admissible in court. It's not issued under a PACE warning, Police and Criminal Evidence Act. There is no on-the-record, off-the-record statement made or anything like that, but there is still evidence that is gathered through that process. And there is nothing wrong in what they are doing. Otherwise, it wouldn't be admissible. And it is used in court because companies can't be bothered to tell all of their employees, "Here's what happens when the HSE call." And the one thing that I used to do when I went to go and help companies would say, "Right, if the HSE call, entry into your premises is not your reception area." If they say, "I have a right of entry," you go, "Absolutely, you're more than welcome to come in. But the person who deals with the HSE isn't here. And our company policy says this person has to deal with you. So when would you like to come back?" And they always go, "That's fine, I'll see you tomorrow." They never, because you've just got this ability to challenge. Whereas if they just walk up and go, little pig, let me in," and you go, "Okay, sorry, mate, but everything they find thereafter is perfectly admissible." It's just canny investigation.
Well, I'm sorry, but that's different for what a police... If you stop someone, you've got to have a reasonable reason to stop them. You can't just search a car, search a premises, or search a phone.
No, that's not what I've just said.
No, but but they have a taillight out or a malfunctioning turn signal,
That's a reason to stop, but you can't just search a car...
No, that's not what
I've just said. Anyway.
No, that's not what I've just said. If someone's, Muller, if you pull someone over and you say, "Okay, that's fine, let's have a look in your boot and see if we can fix your tail light. If that person opens that boot for you...
You're going to be on dodgy ground there, mate.
No,
in the US, yeah, that's totally not
you. If you ask for permission to go in the boot and they give it, that's tough.
No, they've closed that loophole long ago.
Really?
No. Yeah.
Not in the US. The US, if a policeman stops you for a valid stop and then says, hey, may I look in your car, or may I look in your trunk, and you say
yes. That's totally fine.
You've just given them permission.
Yeah, but if you do that here and you've just asked and you've got no reason to look in there, if you find something, you're all stuffed. You can't just look. You can't just go on a fishing trip. You've got to have a reason. You've got to maybe say, I could smell something rotten in that boot. There might be a dead body in there. Look, and you find a dead body and you're fine. But you can't just go look in someone's boot. You can't just do it.
That's not what I've said.
Okay,
though.
So in the United States, the way that
I
want to
be clear about something about this too.
If you have a scenario where you stop someone for a traffic stop and you're like, their taillight is out, and you walk up and you're talking to them, you're like, hey, that front tire is pretty low. We should change that together. So why don't you open your trunk and we'll pull out the spare and change it. That's probably not going to fly in court because when you find the brick of cocaine in their trunk at that point, which would be plain view once the trunk is opened, a good defense attorney is going to say, look, he coerced my client into doing that. Exactly. But if you show up and the person says, hey, look, I'm not sure how to change my tire. Can you help me? And the cop says, yeah, no problem. They open their trunk. You see that brick of coke. Okay, now that's plain view, and that would totally fly.
But there's another aspect to this as well that happens. And again, I don't want to indict all authority and all government.
What the hell was that?
Wow.
Who's got a 3-year-old smacking the hell out of a keyboard?
Hey.
That's crazy.
Hello?
I'm not sure who.
Is that you, Chris?
Is everything just gone quiet?
Oh, it's you! It's Campion!
What happened there? I wasn't doing anything.
He got hacked.
I was searching his computer.
Who were listening in?
The horse has opened the back door to look at your horse porn.
MLD was not happy. Yeah. Like,
go on, Chris, you were saying something sensible.
No, but anyway, this is not an indictment on all authority and all police. But, I think the biggest thing we talk about, we're concerned with, people who are concerned with, is when you grant these powers, abuse can happen and does happen. And I think that's the overall thing that everybody feels when you see something like this. The overall reaction is no. But there are people out there trying to do harm, and there's, a need to figure out new ways to catch these people and protect them. But when you look at, like, I can tell you certainly that I've been also pulled over and been told, can we search your car? And it's like, no. Well, we're going to keep you here because we're suspicious, and we're going to just wait till we get a warrant. And so you either can just let us search your car now,
or
sit here for the next couple hours while we get a warrant.
I'm happy to believe that.
You know what grounds will they get the warrant?
That I am in an ivory castle, mate. No pun intended there.
I promise you, it's a different world.
Yeah,
I would like to think that black people in this country do not suffer the same persecution as I've seen that you do suffer in.
Well, they have in the past, to be honest with you.
In the past, they have, but not now.
But my overall point
here's
is
a common
there
scenario
are ways around
for,
the rules
that
within
exactly.
the law.
You get
it's
stopped.
My overall point. Forget about me.
Well, sorry, guys. Sorry.
Oh, sorry.
You were both talking over each other there. You need to do the thing that we do on the link thing. Chris, say what you want to say.
Okay. My overall point is there are legal ways around the checks and balances. And so you can't always 100% rely on the checks and balances that are in place because, you can – you phrase something a certain way, you ask something a certain way, you're with the cops within his rights to hold me there, you know what I mean? And so, but at the same time, clearly he's infringing upon me, you know what I mean? So these things happen, and so I think that's the overall panic that we feel, is that we know things get abused, and so the more powers we give, people who are concerned, the first thing we think about is how are they going to get abused?
Good point. Jeff, yes?
Okay, here's how you set up that abuse. If you're a cop, you make the stop and then ask if you can search the car. And the person says, nope. And so then the cop says in court, okay, so at that point, because in my experience, people that don't want to have their car searched are typically hiding something that's criminal in nature that they don't want me to see. Therefore, I called for a police dog to come over. And so then you have your canine show up and you can give the dogs learn how to read their handlers. And so you can get them to hit on something on the car, at which point you say, ah, there must be drugs in the trunk of this car. Now you continue to detain the person and their car. You get a search warrant to search the entire vehicle because the dog hit on it. And now 4 hours later, this person, you still write them the ticket that, you know, for the broken taillight, but that's it. And you send them on their way because there wasn't actually anything in the car. And now you've completely screwed up someone's entire day. And
as much as you'd like to sit there and say, nope, we'll wait together, you just don't want to go through the aggravation. You're already frustrated. You're already sitting on the side of the road. Chances are, like myself, you're in handcuffs on the side of the road because they need to, you know, for your safety.
Yep.
Yeah. And so it just becomes more of an aggravation than to say, search the car. You know what I mean? Because there's nothing in there anyway.
But
you
know? What a waste of money. How many police hours are you wasting stopping one person to harass them and go and get a warrant? You're wasting a judge's time and you find nothing. What happens if you go back to the judge and go, here's the warrant, and we didn't find anything?
Isn't it going to go next time? You don't go time? Back to the judge with anything.
Oh, in this country you do. You've got to go back. The judge always wants to see your results. And if you keep going back to the judge and going, we didn't find anything, he's eventually going to go, well, you're not having one next time then.
Yeah, when you're actually Little Big or Crying Wolf, etc.
Exactly. This country, you've got to go back to the same judge or the same magistrate and show the results. And if you keep on showing negative results, he's going to go, well, next time, I'm going to give you more questioning and a little bit harder. He's not going to give you one.
That's great.
Or even a warrant.
It's a great system. Yeah, but it looks like with this thing, too, there's also another aspect to the whole thing, which is the amount of agencies that are allowed to look at this surveillance information. I don't think we even talked about that.
You've got more agencies than we've got, to be honest.
Well, I'm just talking about specifically for your investigator.
Right now, they can't share information. I think that's changing, though, right?
I very much doubt it. We have
some legislation going through to make it easier for cross-agency data sharing. But right now, it's really difficult.
I have to say, this country, the police forces don't share information very well. It's changed.
That's always
been
the case, though, because it's changed. 50-odd.
Well, a lot of the problems is in the past there's been investigations of child porn and child pornography rings and that. And,
you could just move.
Well, that's the problem. So now that's been the guiding now principle into sharing information amongst forces, is that it's nothing to do with any crime. It's down to pornography and pedo rings.
So.
Sorry, this article on the BBC was, I guess, one of your complaining that the gambling commission had access to the data, the food standards agency had access to the data. I'm all for,
hang on, because has access to the data. There may be a route to how they get to that data, but they haven't got direct access to it because they're not an enforcing authority that has senior powers.
They're going to ask for it anyway.
They can ask for it, yeah.
They can ask for it, but they can be refused unless they can show reasonable cause for requesting that information. It's not, you know, there's certain elements of this legislation that I am worried because actually the oversight that goes down to it is going to be tick boxed nearly by senior officers, but there
that's
is
always a problem. Too.
Which is, yeah, but I think there are still checks and balances in there once it hits the court in an admissible case. Of it being used, and that's the point that Muller made earlier on. I think he's dead right on that one. Chat room's taking me to task. They're saying, hang on, I've gone to the HSE website, and they say inspectors have the right of entry to your premises as well as the right to talk to employees and safety representative and exercise powers to help them fulfil their role. Yes, and they're telling me I'm wrong in what I said earlier on. I'm not wrong. I promise you, I'm absolutely right. And I normally, if I'm not sure, I'll go, well, I don't know, I'll stand corrected, but I'm absolutely positive, right? If you're talking about the powers of inspectors, they have right of entry to premises, but if your company policy says that no one else in the corporation can talk to them apart from a single identifiable person like the safety officer, they have to respect your corporate policy. They can't just barge in. They need to get a police officer if they want to do that. And then they can barge in, but the point of them actually getting a police officer to barge in is very, very bad. And I used to work with an EHO who she got a police officer because she went to a scrapyard, because a scrapyard is a shop, it's not a factory, so there you go, that's why HO is enforcing it. And she took a police officer with her, and she stormed in and said to this bloke who was about 4 foot taller than her, "You're a bastard, and I'm going to do you." And he picked her up by the throat, and she turned round to look for the police officer to support her, and the police officer stopped at the gate because she hadn't explained to the police officer that her power of entry extended to him when she got him with her.
Whoops.
So he had to run 50 meters to accost the bloke and get him off her. If your corporate policy says you cannot enter, there has to be extreme circumstances for them to actually force an entry that way, and they won't do it without an officer. They absolutely won't. I am absolutely right. I know I am right, and I'm sorry, but you're quoting the HSC website, and the HSC website is not going to say we have an absolute power of entry, except...
To be honest, most of the time you take a police officer with it, it's to prevent a breach of the peace. It's not to enforce the entry. It's to prevent. It's there to prevent a breach of the peace should one occur.
Yes. Batwinch, you may have a link, but you're talking out your arse, mate. It has nothing to do with it. I'm sorry. That is wrong. Wrong, 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 double wrong, triple wrong, quadruple wrong. And I've sat in PACE interviews as well, mate, and advised people on it, so I am right. Muller knows I'm right because I quoted one of them the other day. We've had some feedback as well. I want to thank you to Mr. Ferry. Do you remember I read a review? Good tech talk, but a bit too much juvenile humour from Tom VF. Do you remember that last week?
Mm-hmm.
He seems to think that I thought he didn't like the podcast because he's given it 4 stars, so he must like it, which he says at the start in his first sentence, but... the teenage level human and constant sexual double entendre is really boring. Thank you, mate. That's okay. He sent me an email, and he's got Slackroom access now because he asked me for Slackroom access. Hi, Ewan. Tom VF here from the podcast Review Land. I do like your show and offered the comment about the humour just as a balanced and informative. I'm maybe full of it when it comes to the humour bit, but it's my opinion. Totally entitled to it, mate. I appreciate you reading the whole review, good and bad, a characteristic of the show that I greatly value. Your production isn't perfect. We produce this like we're mates down the pub, like we're actually down the pub. But it's a lot better than many podcasts. You should pat yourselves on the back. Thank you, Tom.
Kick in on the Mac Mini campaign.
He can kick on. Yeah, give us a Mac Mini and we'll solve all our problems. And you talk about Apple a bit. Your point about your iPad Pro charging problems last week, for example, not Mac Show level, certainly, but you do cover some Apple stuff. Am I not right? Yes, you do. Tom's in Silicon Valley, so please, mate, you can afford it. If you live in Silicon Valley, you can send us 5 Mac Minis. Your point's absolutely right. Apple is off limits as far as an in-depth discussion, so no one can pick an Apple story here, but if there's a cross-reference to Apple or a need to say something about Apple, then that's okay. It's just don't pick your story on Apple. Everyone's got a story, and we've done 43 minutes on encryption and the investigatory powers bills.
Well, I appreciate it because it helps me sort of understand the nuances, and I've been reading a lot about that in the news.
I think one of Sorry, I was just going to say, one of the things that Adam and I have talked about in the securities chat room in Slack is that my greatest concern, and I've said this right from the very start, is that the kind of disrespect that both Apple and the FBI are showing the judiciary in this and the need to fulfill this and flow this through in the court structure is actually going to undo you guys in the end. Because we are already at the stage where judicial oversight has been reduced. And if you continue to bicker and make the judiciary look stupid in this like you currently are, you are going to end up in the same position we're in. And there'll be legislation issued that just bypasses whatever Apple wants to think.
I mean, President Obama all but threatened that at South by Southwest this week. So,
yes, he did. I mean,
that was his stern warning. It's like, hey, you go this route, you know, this is going to get solved in the Congress, and you're not going to like the outcome.
Which was a pretty scary thing to hear him say.
Basically, I'm paraphrasing, but I mean, you can go read the real thing. That was the gist of what he was saying.
But I mean, it goes back to the point that we were making earlier on, is that what he's saying there is effectively what Jeff has just said, to a certain degree, in that the general public does not have the right to a diplomatic bag. Otherwise, they'd have diplomatic bags.
But you do have the ability. So that's the thing, is a lot of the stuff I was listening to you guys go back and forth on, you know, all the legislation, all the things that go through, doesn't change what has always been going on and will continue to go on, which is, you know, I'm going to refer to it generally as social engineering. So the cops knowing the laws and what their bounds are and knowing how to work within those bounds to get the information they want. Same thing that criminals use to get at your personal data. Social engineering, email phishing, all the ways that a lot of this data gets out that you don't want to get out has nothing to do with the technology or the cloud or the server being hacked. It's more about criminals knowing how to run scams. And they've done that for centuries and will continue to do that whether or not this stuff is there. So if you're really concerned about this stuff and you really want your privacy and you want your black box, make it yourself because you do have all the technology to do it. I can do it right now. I can, you know, run full disencryption on my hard drive. I can encrypt all my iPhone backups. I can not put anything into the cloud. I can encrypt all my email end-to-end. I can encrypt all my text messages end-to-end. I can encrypt all my phone calls end-to-end.
No, but
all
you can't.
Technology exists.
No. But what, there's a certain point there that I want to really pick up on, which is this, I threw this into the cloud. And the one thing you guys have got to realize, once you give every information to a third party, you can't claim that it's a secret. Because if it was a secret, you shouldn't have given it to a third party. There's a clue in the title.
But again, if I'm just using their pipes and I'm end-to-end encrypting it, I'm not giving it.
And there's another problem here.
It's on their servers.
If it's encrypted and they don't have the keys, they can't get at it. There's nothing they can do. They have to come to me. And if I'm being charged with a crime, at least in the U.S., and I'm pretty sure over there, I can plead the fifth at that point. I'm not going to give you that because I'm not going to incriminate them.
But there's an assumption of guilt if you don't. Because if you do that, we can say, give us the keys. If you don't, go, well, you're guilty then.
No.
Yeah, they can. That you don't have to give the key.
No, you do.
I'm saying here
that's
you don't.
They could lob you in jail, so you do.
Yeah, here they said they can compel you to use your fingerprint, but they can't compel you. They can't actually say you remember a password. You can just say, I don't remember the password, and they can't.
More people start doing what I'm proposing, you'll be put in jail till you remember.
No. I think there's an interesting point here in the fact of a right to silence, and your right to silence should extend to potentially information that you are accessing through your own action. And I think that's where it gets really sticky, is that, hang on, my phone has a record within it, and if you tell me to open the phone so that I can give you that record, then you're abusing my right to silence. I can see a legal argument there that's definitely justifiable. But if you're talking about the fact that information is at an ISP's in a third-party server, sorry, but you can't. And
if
that's
it's
the
encrypted
point is,
and I have the key, they can give the government the encrypted information, but if I have the key, they can't get at it.
No, but I think that's the point. That's the point I'm making is, I don't think that end-to-end encryption will be deemed to be lawful for the general public.
Yeah, it is currently. Yeah, I mean, that's the risk, and that was what I was getting at. If more people start to do that, then sure enough, the government's going to go in and try and outlaw end-to-end encryption like that they can't crack into.
I think the more
that's
that
a
Apple,
little bit of what's happening right now is
the more that Apple push back and the more that they try and make this into something it isn't, which they definitely are, the more that your government is going to go, do you know what, we don't give a shit what you think, because actually we're going to bypass it all.
Well, but again, and I'm just trying to illustrate the point, is the technologies already exist. So even if Apple wasn't pushing back, or, you know, regardless of the outcome of that, criminals and the people who really want to and who are in the know, who want to protect their data, currently have all the technology and tools to be able to do it.
Right, and they will continue to do so.
In the future, who knows? But I mean, right now, you could, and criminals do. I mean, they use other systems. There's all kinds of services and things where the ISPs and the people transferring the data and storing the data don't have the key.
I think one of the other things that's not being dealt with is the fact that, if you talk about ISP storing stuff, that creates a database, and that database then becomes one of the biggest honeypots in history.
Yes.
Because
well, that's one of the concerns with your legislation, right? Is that
that's it?
These guys are going to become targets for hackers.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about, you know, all your phone records, all your passcodes into your mobile banking systems for whichever bank you're with is going to be stored in the transaction data that's gone on.
and we know that you know, those corporations have proven time and time again how good they are at purely storing data.
And you and I've not seen any evidence of who's paying for any of this as well.
At the moment, they're talking about the government paying for it, but I'm not sure that's going to what that'll. I think they'll pay for it up to the next renegotiation of licenses for ISPs.
But is that paying for it in terms of paying to access that data when they have a requirement to do so, or is that paying all of the ISPs and service providers to physically store that data? I don't know how long the ISPs currently store that data for.
The discussion is at the moment that they will be paid to store it for at least till the renewal of their licenses, and then they'll have to factor that into their costings.
Seriously. When you say government pays for it, I mean, be honest, it's
taxpayer.
The public pays.
Yes, my view is potentially along the line, the taxpayer pays for it initially. And then beyond the taxpayer paying for it,
the customer pays for it.
The customer. So our ISP.
And if you think anything less, you're 3 years old.
But how many gigabytes is the data going to be?
I think it's.
It's not going to be that much, is it? Really, it's not going to be much. It's going to be a few hard drives. It's not going to be mega.
What, for all the communications in the UK? Use the microphone, dude.
It's not going to be all that much. It's only going to be like lines of
Steve,
data.
Use the frigging microphone. That's why I gave it you.
I suppose the key point, Steve, there is, one, how long do they hold it for now?
12,
if they already hold it for 12 months, there's probably no additional costs. If they don't hold it for that, and let's be honest, the ISPs are going to milk it for every single penny they can get because they're operating on profit.
But how much data is it going to use, though? It's not going to be the content, the core.
How much it's going to be who to from how much and they're going to charge.
I mean, if it's a mobile core, the location where the mobile was, which is very important, and that's only going to be, what, three things, the declination, I can't remember all the technical things. So where they were from the cell tower when they made the core, and which cell tower they made it to, or a landline. It's going to be very small bits of data, really. It's not going to be megabytes. It's going to be maybe terabytes the most. I don't know.
I don't think it's going to be massive.
Terabytes are bigger than megabytes, by the way.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is, it's not going to be. It's going to be a couple of rooms full of hard drives. It's not going to be like a whole warehouse of shite.
It's an Eiffel Tower of hard drives
and backups of it, and all the infrastructure that it sits on, and the margins they're going to add on top of that. It will add up.
So go on, give me a figure.
We can't. Neither can you, so shut up. Take the microphone off of someone. John Beckett's left us a review. Thank you, John. It's very kind, mate. Best tech panel podcast on the net. This is The Big Show, by the way. Discovered this by chance while searching for a podcast to listen to while commuting. Entertaining, informative, opinionated, and quite often hilarious roundtable discussions of the week's tech news. I've burst out laughing more than once on packed underground trains while listening to the panellists, either defending their opinions or picking mercilessly on each other. See, he gets us. That's what we're about. Final thing, and a huge plus, the show is not laden with nearly as much advertising as similar shows on other networks.
That's awesome.
Chris Ashley's put his story in the chat room, but dude, we've kind of burned through doing everyone's stories. Yeah, man. It was a good discussion. I've got to say, that's one of the most sensible conversations I've ever had with a group of people on encryption. And that's
saying something.
No, it is. That's valuable, because some of the stuff that's been coming out on other shows has been, and I'm not talking about just our own network, I'm talking about plenty of other networks, it's just, it's unbelievably tinfoil hat bollocks. It's just not close.
I was thinking about this week that a lot this week, and I mean, it's the typical, you know, everybody who's reporting something online is all about the headline, and it's amazing to see if you just dig, you know, half a level past the headline, what was actually said, you know, by these people. So it's, you know, the inflammatory headline, the inflammatory opening paragraph, and that's all 80% of the internet reads these days. And that's what's causing this echo chamber that's so appalling to me. It's so, it's gotten beyond frustrating. The Twitter, the soundbite culture is just so pervasive, and nobody really understands what's going on because no one reads past the first sentence.
Excellent. This podcast is brought to you by UK2. They're awesome. We love them to bits. They look after us like you wouldn't believe. Thank you to them. They've renewed our servers again for the next year, and those servers are like £400 a month. We've got the 100 TB server, which does all the NQL things and all that kind of stuff, all the really cool things. That, you know, if you go to the live channel, britishtechnetwork.com/live, and click play during the week, you will get... I was hoping you could stick around just until we finished the cool things, but never mind, Jeff. Then these are the people you should go to. Go to britishtechnetwork.com/sponsors, and you'll find the offer codes there that you can get 20% off your basket with UK2. Even if you're a returning customer, you can get that. And if you go to britishtechnetwork.com/UK2, they're going to know that you're a returning customer from BTN, and we get the kudos for that. Please check them out. And then, of course, there's Hoyer. Thanks to them for supporting the podcast. We love them to bits. Hoyer make a bigger products than you've ever imagined in your entire life. Mark from Hoyer, who I think is coming for the keynote next week, he showed me a video, and he reckons that in the video they reckon that every single person in the world touches like, you know, a Hoyer product, 7 Hoyer products in a day. And I just thought, wow, that's amazing. And they don't even know they're Hoyer products. And traditionally, you'll think of Hoyer for being for lenses and stuff like that, for covering your camera, ultraviolet lenses and that type of stuff. So, yes, they do that, but they've got an incredible optics range. And the glasses that I wear on the shows are the ones that that Hoyer made for me specifically for the studio, and so that I could write a review for them. So, you know... I didn't do a good review because I thought Hoyer might be a product that you know might sponsor us in the end. But I do love their products, and we only put people in here if we actually believe in the products that they've got. And I really, really do. I love my Hoyer glasses. I would never change them. I've bought other Hoyer glasses, and Hoyer have actually been really kind as well, because they've put. I'll be on the next show actually. The thing that goes in on the back of my camera, the Lupe, they've rejigged that so that I've actually got another 5 years of use out of my eyes with that. It's a specially made lens. So thanks, Hoyer, for looking after BTN. We hope that you guys will look after Hoyer. Contact podcasts@hoyer.co.uk and see what they can do for you. And a huge thank you to the people that have left some Patreon donations. As Adam said earlier on, we're on a drive. We need 5 Mac Minis, 5 brand new Mac Minis. They're £400 a piece, and we need 5 of those to replenish the wall, because the wall is crazy. It's falling to pieces. These are 2008 Mac Minis in a lot of cases. So please, 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 if you'd like to up your Patreon donation to help us get to that goal, which is, we're like a Blue Peter appeal, yeah? We need 8 bottle tops. Old. We need bottle tops. There we go. And we'll get 5 brand new Mac Minis that'll go in the wall, and that'll solve all of our problems of connection and lip sync and all that kind of rubbish. So thanks to the people that have up their Patreon donation, have donated. If you're sitting thinking, oh, I donate on Patreon, please just check that PayPal hasn't shafted us, because there's quite a few people who've thought for the last 6 months that they're donating to BTN, and then they've looked and they've realised that actually they aren't donating anything to BTN because PayPal's shafted them. So so please double check your donations if you possibly can. Cool things. Adam, do you want to start us off? Because I know you've got to disappear.
I already used my cool thing on the
So you haven't
on
got one,
Mac,
that's fine.
So.
Have a good weekend, mate, and thank you very much for staying over for this show.
I can, yeah.
Well, I'll give you time to find one then. Chris, yeah. Have you got a cool thing, mate?
I do have a cool thing. I mentioned this on my show yesterday, so I think folks will benefit from this. I have an HP 8600 printer, and it's one of those all-in-ones, print, scan, fax, and, you know, if you hear it for us, it's tax season, and, you know, you always have to scan your tax documents, send them back to the accountant. And there's a couple ways to do that. You can certainly browse the IP address of the printer, but HP has a pretty cool app in the Windows Store called HP Scan and Capture, and it's a very simple app to use. You install it. One of the first things it pops up and says, hey, it'll search your network and find a printer, and you can then use that printer. And then from that app, you can do simple things like capturing photos or capturing documents across the network. Now, the one aspect of it that I really like is Oftentimes when you're scanning documents, you really want to just send one doc with three pages in it. But you, because of the way typically the scanner works, you end up scanning and emailing three attachments. Well, in the HP Scan and Capture app, you can actually continue to scan until you're done. And then once you save, it saves it all as one single PDF. And I actually love that feature about this. So if you have an HP printer and you're just doing it the old way, scanning directly to the computer, check out the HP Scan and Capture app in the Windows Store.
Excellent, mate. Thank you very much. Good pick. Jeff, do you have a pick? Oh, let me guess, Jeff. No, hang up.
Okay. You can come back to me.
Okay.
I got one.
He's a bit keen, isn't he? Love you, Jeff, by the way.
So something that I always have in my office, this is the old one. It's a toolkit from iFixit, which has like every spludger, every like bit, every possible thing you could need to open up any tech device. It even has your little anti-static clip so that you don't short out your computer when you're putting in memory and stuff like that. And I bought this years ago, and I use it for everything, even like opening up like the kids' toys and stuff like that, those little tiny screws. It has your pentalobe screws, any weird screw that you're ever going to encounter, you're going to have no problem if you have this kit. I mean, it literally works for everything, and it's really high quality, great stuff. It's got little tweezers. And like I said, if you need to open an iPhone, a Samsung phone, what device you have, this Good is pretty thing. Much going to be able to do it. And $69.95.
I was going to say $70, so it's not cheap, but you're saying the quality's good and you're getting into any device you want.
Again, it's one of those things that, it was a little expensive to buy at first, but I use it almost every week. Something will come up and it's like, I just go grab this thing and use it. So it's well worth the price. And they have other kits. You can go to iFixit. They have smaller kits if you just need, specific devices. Thing about this is I think the bit kit for the screwdriver is 64 different bits, so you have every pentalobe, every hex, every every size of Phillips that you need, standard, whatever. It's just going to cover everything. So if you deal with tech at all, if you're opening up computers or technology or anything like that, it's just a really handy kit to have.
Horse in the chat room says, static clip, you're a wimp. Lick your fingers like I do and put a toe in the ear socket.
I didn't say I used the static clip. I just said it's in there.
It was in there, right. Okay, good man. Yeah, good qualification. Camps, what have you got for us, bud?
Mine's in the chat room. So it's a shame that neither Jeff, Kelly, or Paul are in tonight. So it's an iOS comic creator for Doctor Who, Doctor Who comic creator. So I've had a bit of a laugh with my nephew this week, playing on this. So on the app, it's a free app, on iPad and iOS. iPad and iPhone. There's some in-app purchases around about £2.99, if I remember right, on an offer for additional characters, additional Doctors. But essentially, what you can do is create your own Doctor Who comic. You can create comics of different sizes, different number of pages. You can make your own monsters, it's a bit of a laugh to just create. For any Doctor Who fan out there, to create your own comics. Really enjoyed playing with it this week. Make your own titles, put your own speech sentences in there. Rotate your characters round, navigate them around different backgrounds and stuff. Good laugh. And like I say, free, and it gives you about, I think it's about 100, it says, options in there to move your characters around, move your backgrounds around, and obviously you put whatever sort of speech marks you want in there, but you can buy additional packs to get different Doctors and different monsters in there as well. So good laugh.
My fear with this kind of stuff is that you play it for 10 minutes and then you realise you've exhausted it, and you're saying that's not the case. No, I think
depends,
it's a real fit.
Depends. I think the free app gives you, like I say, around about 100 different scenarios. So you can exhaust it for free, delete it if you want. If you're into Doctor Who, you want to expand it further, you want to expand your Doctor characters and your monster characters, by all means, use the in-app purchase, which is via the in-app store.
Excellent. It's all about how big a Whovian you are.
It is, definitely. Definitely, Adam.
Good. Excellent. My cool thing tonight... is Jabber. All night we've been broadcasting on Jabber for... We've done a couple of test broadcasts, but we've always had a problem with the audio. I've now fixed the audio issues at great expense. But Jabber is giving us a bit of promotion. They're pushing us out to the wider world. And thanks to Ryan, who's a member of the Slack room, who's one of the developers, I've put a camera up here, and we're broadcasting live now. We've got a few people that are watching through Jabber, and they are enjoying the back scene view, if you like, you know, the backstage view of BTN. All the stuff that goes on, the screens that I use in front, and they've probably got my Amazon password now that I've typed it, they'll slow it down. But you can see here that this is a full working TV studio, in effect, here at BTN. And you can enjoy all the things that we do and watch it if you go to the Jabber channel, jabber.com/British Tech Live, and you can see the broadcast. What they do is give you an empowered tool for broadcasting. There you go. It's a kind of bit periscopy type stuff, but actually it's a bit better than that. And you get your own chat room with it as well. Unfortunately, I can't have it running because it just saps a bit too much bandwidth for us here. So I've been doing, you know, if you want to go there and then come to our IRC chat room, then you're more than welcome to throw some comments and still just watch us. I've put a fisheye lens up, but it's a big fisheye lens. I might need to change that.
So if you want to watch from the backside, use Jabber.
There we go. Then you can see everything that happens. You can see when people are talking and what I'm doing and what Muller's doing and other people that may turn up. And we'll be running it again on Monday night, because on Monday night we'll be doing the Apple keynote right here at 4:45. So it's 4:45. Because don't forget, we've done the daylight savings thing in America, but not over here. So we're an hour earlier for the keynote than normal. So come here at 4:45, 4:45, and listen to all the shiz that we talk about, what Apple are doing, not doing, and we take the piss out of Muller's predictions, which are not even going to be close.
Oh, you're wrong, man.
And last but by no means least, Muller, what's your key cool thing?
The Concept 2 Plus. Did put a link, join it again.
I've got it. No, it's a picture of it on screen, look.
It's a cracking little camera. I've only had it a couple of days, but playing with it. But the quality is outstanding. Attaches to my bike handle. Eventually, if I get another helmet, it might attach there. But
it's good.
It is.
I've looked at the video quality, and it's excellent, apart from the fact it wasn't attached particularly great. But yeah, it will do.
I'm still... I've had it 2 days, so give me a chance.
Yeah, but you can do 120 frames a second on this on 720, can't you?
Oh, it's cracking.
Absolutely. It is. It's very, cracking. Very, very good. And you can, the thing that's kind of cool, if you look in that centre barrel there, say that you linked this or you connected it to your helmet slightly differently so that you wanted to rotate the camera to a different angle because it's on its side. All you've got to do is turn that barrel at the end.
And it rotates.
And you turn it to the correct angle that you want it at so that it rotates the whole barrel and the sensor. Which is kind of cool. So,
it Bluetooths to your phone.
And it Bluetooths to your phone. The feed was very good, I have to say. Well done, mate. It was a good purchase. I like it. And you said 5 hours battery life if you put a second battery.
Two and a half on one battery.
Yeah.
Brilliant. And I've bought another battery. It's now arrived at home. I've just checked.
£200 if you want a brand new one, or if you want to go to the place in Acot Screen that Muller got his from.
£105. I got it on from CX.
£105.
£105.
There we go. With housing?
Yeah, got the whole lot.
Watch out.
Second hand.
No worries, Adam. Thank you. Where can we get a hold of you, Chris?
You can always catch me every week on the great SMR podcast. And if you're not checking us out, it's essentially this show, but with three black guys. So you got to check it out. SMRpodcast.com. And you can catch me on Twitter.
I've got to get that one.
It's just like... Is that like the what was the place that used to have like the strippers and it was like three ugly birds and one good looking one or something? Or
I just spell SMR podcast anyway. I've got to go.
SMRPODCAST maybe, okay, perhaps.
I've got to listen to that.
Find me on Twitter at Big Chris Ashley.
That's just awesome, man. It's just like this but with black guys.
Horse
fire. Oh, calling each other N-words.
I hope not.
Not while we're rolling audio. Not while we're recording.
Afterwards. Yeah, in the pre-show.
And post.
The post, but using the bad language. There we go. Where can we get a hold of you? I'm trying to work out who's left. Camps.
I'm Campion UK on Twitter. I'm normally on the Big Show, occasionally on the Max Show, and in the Slack room.
Yeah, you're regular now, mate. Absolute regular.
Cheers.
You can get Jeff over at the Mac Observer. We read one of his stories out actually today on the Mac Show. I didn't even know it. And he's at Jay Gamet on Twitter. You can get Adam at the MacCast podcast, which is one of the essential podcasts if you own a Mac. And he's at MacCast on Twitter as well. And Muller, if people want to follow, you've had a bit of a surge in followers, haven't you, dude?
Major surge, mate. I'm heading towards 1,000.
Whoop.
Woo-hoo.
Go for it.
Muller Biker.
At Muller Biker on Twitter.
Yep.
Excellent, mate. Thank you very much for your insight today into all things legal. My name's Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. We'll be back again next week, and we'll have a normal show, not just all about encryption, but actually, I've got to say, if you want to know about encryption, that was the show you should have listened to, because it was very sensible, unerringly sensible compared to some of the other crap that's been taught this week. See you next week. Thanks for listening.